So I'm Kevin Ward. I've been working in SaaS operations for the last few years, mainly focused in Series A to Series D companies, running everything from sales ops to marketing ops, billing teams, and finance teams, with a focus on like early stage startups and B2B SaaS.
Okay, so first question, kind of starting easy. What are your current favorite blogs, podcasts, books, etc., for keeping up with sales ops industry news?
So the main thing that I look at is probably Modern Sales Pros, and I've been a member of that community for for the last few years. It's grown to be pretty massive, so there's a lot of good information in that one. But there's like a lot of helpful people to answer those questions. In terms of like other blogs that I look at, I have my team look at articles often and like compile them into like how they relate to Electric or how they don't relate to Electric. And I have them focus on like Saster is a great one. Topo always comes out with great studies that we look at. And then in terms of books, like it depends on like where people are in their career, what their focus is. But like I really like the Sales Acceleration Formula, Radical Candor, and then there's a couple things around like pricing that I'm really interested in. And then in terms of like podcasts, I listen to the Sales Hacker podcast every once in a while, but it mostly comes from like Saster and then just like general news and then Modern Sales Pro stuff.
Interesting. When you have your team put the articles together, mm-hmm. do you have them like present on it at all, or is it just sort of internally to have a bank of these articles?
So we do it, I've done it both ways. The one that I found to be the most effective is to have people like group teach to everybody. So like, you know, they'll compile all of the articles together and then like teach about whatever article that they found. I think like one of the important things in sales ops is a lot of times you're going to have to search for things yourself and figure it out yourself. So like, I don't give a lot of direction on it, just more like, you know, find something that you find interesting. And if it applies to Electric or if it doesn't, tell me why and like how we could or couldn't use it. What I find is like people tend to go towards their interests, which is also like an effective way to understand, you know, like what they're interested in.
Yeah.
And so like I've found, you know, some of my team will go after like product specific articles, which helps us understand like how product development works and then understand like other aspects of the business. Somebody might go more into the finance or, you know, like pricing areas, or, you know, some people go directly into the sales strategy or CSM strategy or account management stuff. But in general, I think it's a good way for them to like, you know, present their own interests and then teach everybody else about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think so often I'm reading these articles and want to share it, but haven't found an effective way to really share it with my team. Like, I'll tell them, I might forward it, but that seems so much more engaging.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Moving on to the next question. After you've taught, what is some tech that your sales teams use that you can't live without, and how do they use it on a daily basis?
So this one is really dependent on the type of company that you are and the stage that you are in. Like, earlier stages, and when you have a smaller sales team, something like Outreach or SalesLoft is going to be way too much of a heavy lift for you to implement. You know, like as you grow, your tech stack has to grow with you. So it really just depends on like where you are. Like our last tech stack, it's evolved over the last year. Now we have something that we'll grow with for the next couple years. But like we had Yesware, which was fantastic for like easy changes to cadence cycles and things like that. But and moving over to something like Outreach wouldn't have been realistic at that point because we didn't have like the basic understanding of how we wanted our cadences to work and how we wanted to reach out to prospects. Mm-hmm. Once you start to test that stuff and figure out like what's working and what's not working, then it's a great time that you can like really say, all right, I'm ready to implement something that's going to be a lift for us, but like the adoption is going to be there because everybody's looking for something to make their lives easier. And so like in terms of tech, it depends. Like, you know, I've seen LinkedIn Sales Nav work really well in some companies and really poorly in other companies, but it's industry specific. Like in real estate, LinkedIn was not near as effective as, you know, it is for some of the other companies that I've worked for. But in general, I think, you know, Salesforce is like one that you have to use for everything. Beyond that, it's like, make sure that you have an auto email tool, make sure that you just like have some prospecting tools in there. And then it just depends on like where you are within your cycle. Like we're introducing Gong to the team right now. That was something that we did a pretty heavy tech push in, like late October, basically through August through like October of last year. We had implemented outreach and then a couple other pieces that associated with that, and the integration and the lift on that kind of stuff is just massive. Yeah. So driving adoption in that case is like the most important thing. So you don't want to implement too much tech at any given time. You want to make sure that like you're giving the team the ability to go all the way through and like understand and implement and adopt everything and like answer those questions. And then once you do that, it's easier to like start adding on other pieces towards it. So like I think a huge part too is like tech tends to be like shiny for mm-hmm. people, right? And so like tech is something that people always go to is like, oh, this will help or this will, you know, like solve this issue. But like if there's not a fundamental issue or like that you're trying to solve, or you're not identifying like how it's going to affect or improve your process, and like you haven't defined out the process first, then there's no reason to like actually implement the tech, because you're just throwing tech at something that you don't really understand.
Gotcha. Going back sort of to that point, and also going back to your point about when your sales team is big enough to actually implement sales software outreach, do you mm-hmm. find that there's a peak number? Is it more about like revenue and how you're doing there? What is the ideal size, do you say?
So I think it like there's like a standard like license count that it makes it like not really worth it to mm-hmm. do. But it also, I think it's more dependent on like how how you're actually focused and like where you're focused in terms of your sales process at that point. Like if you have a really good sales process and something that's working, and you're able to like, you know, really understand what's working and what's not working, like implementing outreach or sales off just takes your analytics to the next level, along with like, you know, automation and all of that. So, but like before that, you have to understand what you want to input into it, right? Like you have to understand what your cadences should look like. You have to understand what your touch points are. You have to understand who you're reaching out to, how you're acquiring the data. Like there's a lot of foundational things that need to go in before you can like implement something like that and make it effective. Mm-hmm. And then a big part too is like your team has to be willing to adopt it, right? And so like you really want to make sure that when you're doing an implementation like that, that like you think through as much as you possibly can. Chances are it'll break like 5 minutes after you put it out, but yeah, and you can test it as much as you want. But like if you can avoid as many issues by testing, you know, prior to that, like I like to do beta groups on a lot of things that I do so that I can understand like what their flow is, how it's going to impact their flow, and how it's going to like change any of their, you know, day-to-day tasks. Mm-hmm. The goal with this stuff, right, is like you want it to make everything easier for them, not make anything harder. Yeah. And so like if you don't have, you know, full documentation, full training and full buy-in from the team, you're not going to have a good implementation. And that's what tends to like, you know, sink those kind of software purchases.
Very, very actionable advice. Thank you. Next, as far as your work, you've talked a lot about, you know, what you do and how you coach others, but mm-hmm. what is your typical day-to-day as a leader?
So it depends on, like, again, the stage of the company. Like, what my day-to-day is now is mm-hmm. a lot different than it was a year ago. Now that I built out a team, mm-hmm. it tends to be a lot more, you know, like, managing projects and managing focus, and a lot less, like, actually analyzing or building things.
Yeah.
But a lot of it, like, it's, you know, like, ops in general, because it's so cross-functional, and it's, like, you know, we work with so many other teams, a lot of the job is just, you know, like, making sure that data flow is correct, that we're not like duplicating efforts, that we're like identifying the right gaps and focusing on the right areas that's going to be the most impactful for the business. And a lot of that has like, you know, cross team effect too. So like if you're getting good data in the sales process, then it's going to pass over to give the CSM team more information about the customers that they're going to be supporting. And then again, that information goes directly back to the marketing team to understand who we should be marketing to and how we should market to them. So like it becomes a, you know, it just becomes a full cycle. So I think like what it comes down to for me is like, is this going to be impactful for us in the right ways? Or is it, you know, like what are the projects that we're looking at? How are they going to affect the business overall? And make sure that like, you know, our main focus stays on making the sales process easy and like making sure that we keep our data very clean and making sure that we reduce touch points that are necessary for the like for a customer to become a customer. So you want to make sure, you know, like that everything flows from one channel to the next channel. So like a lot of the projects that we did in 2019 were really building out, you know, a lot of foundational stuff. A lot of what we're doing now is analyzing how that's working and making the tweaks on it. So, you know, like when we identify the specific gaps, it's like, okay, are we going to look at, you know, if we're going to implement territories, that's like not just a one and done thing. It's like we implement and then iterate on, right? So like it always comes from like, if we do one big project, then we need to make sure that we do, you know, follow up on that and make sure that we iterate on that, because it's not just kind of a one and done thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How long would you say after you've implemented a project would you kind of get for that testing phase?
So it depends on the project, and it depends on the size. Like doing something like outreach is like a fundamental process change, mm-hmm. right? Doing something like integrating Gong becomes a lot easier on the like initial implementation, because a lot of it's just background, right? So it depends on like how much of a lift it is on the operations side versus how much of a lift it is on the actual team, and that kind of defines like, you know, what the like length of time is going to be. But we always have, you know, like when we implement something, we make sure that we get feedback as quickly as possible, because like if we can address things as quickly as possible, then it makes it a lot easier for us to move forward with stuff. So if we do something and excuse me, an integration breaks, then we want to know about it as fast as possible so we can make those fixes, right? Like you don't want to move on to the next project without making sure that this one is working the right way. And because like if you put something in there and it's just kind of half-assed, then people won't ever like actually adopt it, and all of that time spent is never going to actually go anywhere. And the other thing too is like, we work so much with data that, you know, like we put such an emphasis on data that and data quality that we push that down to our reps, we push that down to the managers, we push that everywhere. And so, you know, like a huge part is just making sure that the data is actually working and the data is actually flowing. So, you know, when we do analysis, like we have our standard analysis that we'll do for like board meetings and things like that. But then there's always iterations on that. We did, you know, an ICP analysis 3 times last year to make sure that we're actually moving in the right direction. Identifying, you know, like, is there potential areas that we can improve? Is there ways that we can expand our, you know, like ICP, which then will increase what our serviceable market is? Is that going to be a product thing? Or is that, you know, like, what are the easy lifts to get there? So, like, it just really depends on the project, but I think it's, you know, continual iteration. Like, I kind of take the view that no process is ever perfect, right? So we can't ever think that something that we implement is just done. It's mm-hmm. always just like, you know, okay, what's the next improvement that we can make on it?
Gotcha. But at some point you have to decide when is the moving natural logic point to the next project. Is that just when the need comes up, or is that more based off if you feel comfortable enough with the process you're in?
I think it depends, you know, like if you can pass it over to, you know, like manage from a day-to-day onto like the sales managers or something like that, right? Like an analysis, our analysis is done basically when we pass it off to the executive team to review. Mm-hmm. And then depending on like what questions come out of that or where they want to focus on something, then we'll go back and analyze that more, do that, but that's like kind of a subsequent project after that one, right? So like I think there's things on my team's list that are always ongoing, and then there are things that are like we have due dates for, but then you'll see, you know, maybe the next quarter there's something that's very similar that's associated with it, but it's like an iteration on what we had done the prior quarter. What we found, you know, like looking through, you know, in our look back of 2019 is like every quarter the project list got smaller, but the projects themselves got much bigger. Yeah. So there was much more to implement at that point, and it wasn't, you know, just like quick tasks. It became much more, you know, like overarching themes that we were working on. So those could go, you know, like for a full quarter, but they were all, you know, like they were all essentially connected to each other. So I think a big part of it too is like identifying how you can connect your projects so that you're working towards, you know, like one goal, but you're not working kind of in silos, especially like within the own within your own team. So like if we're implementing a solution, it's going to take my Salesforce admin, my sales ops manager, you know, and my and a couple other people on my team to make sure that, you know, like everything's working in the right way. Did we document it? Did we implement it properly? Did we test everything that we can? Did we identify all of the gaps that we were trying to solve, you know? So like it's a team effort on that front. But once the integration's done, you know, like my Salesforce admin might not spend near as much time on it, right? It kind of passes over to, all right, are they actually implementing and adopting this? And that can take, you know, somebody actually sitting with the reps and ensuring that they're utilizing everything properly, that they're understanding everything and making sure that, you know, like there's not questions that are just going on like unasked. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, there's a lot of like one-on-one time just to make sure that we, you know, capture everything.
Gotcha. That kind of leads in pretty nicely. I'm gonna skip to a certain question about CRM usage, because you've mm-hmm. touched on this a bit. about what are your thoughts? You said everyone kind of needs Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you've mentioned integrations. What are your thoughts on integrations and generally how they help or hurt data integrity?
So, I mean, like everything that you do should be trying to help your data integrity, not hurt it, right? But that really just comes to, like, that comes back to the same point of like how everything flows for a customer lifecycle. So, like, the things that flow from, you know, Marketo or HubSpot or whatever marketing automation your software you're using into Salesforce, it shouldn't be everything because you're not trying to duplicate your software, right? Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that, like, only the important information is getting into Salesforce, and that's how you maintain, you know, like a much better data quality. It also is like you have to make sure that you put right things in place. Like if you upload a bunch of duplicates, you know, like into your instance without double checking something, then that's on you, right? And like then you don't have a clean instance and no one's going to want to utilize your data or trust it, right? And like a huge part of being in ops in general, it's like finance numbers are what, you know, like we review and like are what are like, you know, are foundational to the business. It's the same thing for like CRM quality for like an ops team. You want to make sure that like if you're keeping information in there, everything has a point so that you don't just flood your system with a bunch of different fields that are just absolutely useless. Like I think a lot of sales ops in my experience has been not saying no, but saying like, let's identify how we do this the right way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, let's not add a field for a specific campaign. Like that's just crazy, yeah. Right? But it's like a lot of people don't think like that. So it's not that you want to say, like you're not saying no to something. It's like, let's figure out a way to make this more effective. And then if you actually utilize that field, like, you know, if it comes up, you know, a couple times, I try to use it as like, if the same thing comes up three times, then I'll implement a field for it. Mm-hmm. And then that's like, but it has to be like three separate occasions to kind of justify that, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise you end up with like just a lot of fields in there, a lot of complexity to your instance. And like, then it just becomes really dirty and you're not going to know which fields to report on or anything like that. Like my Salesforce admin went through a project later in Q4 because we don't roll out near as much stuff like, you know, in December. It's just not going to be an effective use of time.
Yeah.
But she went through and made, you know, like we have a chart of all of the fields in Salesforce, what their purposes are. So we've created a glossary for people that empowers them to, one, like understand which fields are being used and which are not being used, which like page layouts are good for that kind of stuff. But it also is like when you're running a report, you need to have a quick reference on like what fields I should be looking at, right? And so like the more that you can maintain those and like maintain data integrity within that, the easier time you're going to have doing any portion of your job, which is like from analysis to, you know, like implementing processes to any of that kind of stuff. And like when you map over an integration and you have 700 fields that you're looking at, it's not super helpful. Mm-hmm. When you're mapping over an integration and you know exactly which fields you're trying to get the information into, it makes it much more simplistic.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So generally the theme is to keep it clean, is try to kind of have like a funnel. So larger marketing, and then as it goes down, you want to make sure you're only passing on the most important information.
And it goes over to the, like, each team's going to need something different too, right? Mm-hmm. So it's making sure that, like, one, you're addressing what each team is going to need, but also make sure that you're, like, not duplicating fields, right? Like, you don't need three fields to understand, you know, like, how many people work at a company, right? Mm-hmm. But you will probably have to standardize that, right? Like we found, you know, this last year that none of the industry lists that we were working with from like LinkedIn or ZoomInfo or any of those were consistent across the board. So it made for a really difficult time understanding like industries specifically.
Yeah.
So we implemented a like our own industry list that was basically like, what's the industry that they service and then what's their go-to-market strategy. Mm-hmm. And that's completely separate from like how you would look at it on LinkedIn. So, you know, you could have like an auto company that was like auto focused, but their actual go-to-market is tech, which is a great fit for us, right? Now, if it was just like, you know, an auto dealership, not necessarily as great, right? So it's like really focusing that effort and making sure that like, if you're going to do those fields, those can now be used in like our ICP analysis, but they're also really easy to fill out and understand. And then we can use like standardize those same fields kind of across the board. And when we can do that, it makes the data integrity a lot better, even though it was a heavy lift to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. I was thinking about how so often, like, we go after someone manufacturing, but they're manufacturing certain things, and that really changes up. But under ZoomInfo, it's just manufacturing often.
Exactly. And that was the same issue that we ran into. And, like, under LinkedIn, it could be manufacturing as well, or it could be something else because they don't necessarily overlap on their industry lists, right? And so that became, like, super tricky for us. So it was just one of those things of, like, let's solve this issue. And now we can, like, after we did that, we had the, you know, sales team helped us out by, like, anytime that they were reaching out to something, they were researching the company and then just filling those that information in, which got our database to have the majority of those fields filled out pretty quickly. And then it allowed us to do, like, ICP analysis much easier.
Yeah. That kind of leads in well to my question about marketing, because this is sort of how you're getting the data from marketing. How closely do you work with Marketing General? It sounds like you guys work pretty closely. And what do you think about the leads marketing provides and how sales ops and marketing can work well together?
Yeah, so I think, like, it's fundamental for you to work with your marketing team, like, consistently, right? Like, you never want to silo anything out, and, like, your job in operations is to make sure that that's not happening, right? And, like, there's the same data flow that's coming through marketing is going to be going to your sales reps. So you want to make sure that it's in line with, like, your data model and all of that kind of stuff. But the leads, I think, like, you know, I hate the idea of, like, finger pointing or, like, these are poor leads or whatever. Like, so it really comes down to, like, are they targeting the right people? That targeting comes off of an ICP analysis that's then driven by what we convert on the sales team and what we retain, right? So, like, it's if everybody's focused towards the same goal and everybody's focused on the same, you know, like, kind of customers that we're going after, then we should be getting great stuff, right? So it's like, if you're not just gonna, like, you're not trying to just toss a bunch of stuff out there and see what sticks, right? You want to make sure that you're doing something that's a focused effort. And that's the same thing for outbound. And so, like, if you know we're finding information out on what kind of companies work and what kind of companies don't work for us, then we should have that same information be relayed back to the marketing team for them to focus their efforts, right? It's like, we're all driving towards the same goal. So, like, we want to make sure that we're all getting the right information and standardizing that and, like, making sure that that whole flow works really well so that everybody is on the same page.
Yeah, and as far as a process for that, because I think so often we know we need to be aligned with marketing, but teams sometimes have a hard time really figuring out what's the right cadence to check up, what's the right, you know, channels to kind of communicate between. Any certain process that you found really works? Is it just a bi-weekly meeting?
I mean, it's over-communication, you know, like, that's what it comes down to, I think, is like, why are we doing the things we're doing? What's the value in it for the team, right? And, like, that goes kind of both ways, right? Like, if you understand that there's a bunch of campaigns out there that are trying to get you more, you know, like, accounts or more meetings for the, like, sales reps to take, there's no reason why they wouldn't be on board with that, right? Unless it's a bunch of something that's unqualified, but that shouldn't happen in the case if they're focused on the same things that you're focused on, right? So, like, if you're, you know, like, going after the same kind of companies as, like, the sales team is outbounding to, then you're gonna have a lot, like, there's always gonna be some garbage that comes through, but there's always some garbage in the database, right? So, like, it, you know, like, it's not a one-to-one where it's like everything's gonna be just absolutely spectacular, but it's also how you learn too, right? Like, you can't restrict yourself so much within a startup that you don't allow yourself to grow, you know? Like, you want to make sure that you really understand, like, we're going to have to take some risks and we're going to have to understand, you know, like, and, like, take some ways to understand more of what we can go after versus just saying, like, this is everything that we can't, you know? Because, like, as you evolve over time, like the idea is that your product's evolving, that your sales process is evolving, what you can support is evolving. So, like, your restrictions kind of, you know, either you can, like, really understand your customers better and understand your, like, ICP better, or you can start to refine it based off of, you know, like, what new information you're getting. And as long as everybody's kind of relaying that back and forth, like, the marketing team's fantastic for being able to test more stuff, like, you know, by getting further air coverage on things. And then, like, you know, we can see kind of what works and what doesn't, but it is important, like, one doesn't work without the other one. So it's really important that, you know, like, everything flows in the same way because we're all going towards the same goal, right? It's like pipeline and revenue is what it's all scored off of.
Yeah, and I often think from a marketing perspective, sometimes you can forget that, like, your main goal isn't leads, it's pipeline of revenue.
Exactly.
And that's really important. Everyone gets aligned on those goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it a couple times where it's like, we'll get a bunch of leads, but they don't turn into anything. So it's really like more of a waste of time, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, those things will happen, absolutely, but you just want to reduce the amount of times that they happen and then put the barriers in place, right? So whether it's, you know, like scoring or understanding like the actual like cycle of how your like leads go, you want to make sure that it's not like, oh, well, this one person gave me their personal email address and that's going to be like great for B2B SaaS, right? Yeah. It doesn't work like that, right? It's like, what's the standard that we agree on? So I do find like SLA is important between departments. That way everybody's held to the same standard and everybody is very clear on what that standard is. Mm-hmm. And then that really helps, you know, kind of push that forward too, where it's like, if everybody understands very clearly, you know, like what the actions are that need to be taken, then, and like what the, you know, promise is from both sides, then we hold ourselves to that level. And I think it reduces a lot of that, you know, like potential friction.
Yeah, that's great advice. Kind of switching gears entirely. Want to go over Salesforce casting, which is definitely more ops, and then comp structure. So we'll start with Salesforce casting. As ops, are you in charge of it for your department? And if so, what methods do you use to make your forecast as accurate as possible? How often do you forecast?
So we've gone through like multiple forecasting models. And like, am I in charge of Salesforce? Is that, was that the question?
Or just in charge of forecasting, because I have heard some companies where it's more on like the VP of sales kind of mix.
So we work, I mean, like we work directly with our VP of sales to forecast, right? But we, there's like, we actually look at it in a couple different ways. We modeled it out multiple times to understand like which data model is getting us the closest. And this is where it all comes back to like communication again, right? Is like the VP of sales, like David looks at our forecast that we provide at the beginning of the month. And that's based off of, you know, like what our average stage rates are, along with like looking at average over the last, you know, 4 to 6 months based off of what information we're looking at. So it can be like, what is everything in pipeline, apply at a specific close rate, you know, like win rate to that, and then apply like, you know, some then it just like applying like the hedge on it essentially. And then, but like if you can get the data quality really strong in there and make sure that everybody's utilizing the amount field correctly, the, you know, like stages and the close date, if you have stages, close date, and the amount all correct in there, then you're going to have a really strong forecast. And like, but to be able to get there, the importance comes down to like working with the sales team and the sales managers to ensure that their team is continually updating that data, right?
Yeah. I was going to ask, if how much training are you involved of actually helping the sales team understand like, okay, is this actually, you know, at this stage, or is it really? Because it all relies on the sales team kind of being aware enough of their own deals.
So a lot of it, like, I never want to be seen, you know, like on the ops team as like, you never want to be like, I'm like cracking the whip from this side, right? Because the truth is like, we have to partner with everybody and we don't want to lose that partnership by just being like, oh, what a pain in the ass they are, right? It, like, we need to be seen as the support team and as a partner for everybody. So like, you have to work fundamentally with the sales management to say like, this is why this is really important. This is the only way we're going to get there. When they understand that, then they can, you know, relay that to their teams much better. We do send, you know, like, opportunity health reports 3 times a week to our VP of sales, and he reviews them, sends them out to the managers or individuals, saying like, hey, this doesn't look like it's as healthy. Are we like, you know, still following up on this, or should it be closed lost, right? And having like really strict standards around that has allowed us to get much better at forecasting. But it's always, you know, identifying like, it's, we found that it's a lot of different combinations involved with forecasting, and what we can provide is based off of like the data model that we put together and like testing and a hypothesis around that, right? But the only way that works is with good data hygiene. And so like, our managers do a forecast like each week, and we're involved in that. And then we do our forecast at the beginning of the month and then follow that up. And we do like a 30 and a 60 day. And we've gotten it to the point that like, we feel really confident in it. When we do miss on something, whether we miss or whether we don't, we do a full retros every month on like where we said we would come in and where we actually came in. Like what happened with those deals? Was it something with the data integrity? We'll go look specifically at what pushed, what pulled, and like, you know, what closed loss from a certain stage that we weren't expecting. Because if we expect, you know, 80% of something at a specific stage to close win, that's not necessarily defined by like, it'll close win over, you know, like any period of time. So then you have to understand the close date specifically, it's 80% to close this month, right? And like, if that pushes, Was it that we just didn't have an understanding? Should it have not been in that stage? Was it not far enough along, right? And sometimes you'll have things like stage regression, right? It's like somebody gets added into the mix. Well, you didn't understand that before. Now you're actually demoing them again. That's not something that I can call negotiate and is going to close at 90%,
yeah.
Right? So it really does, like, it's a lot of collaboration and a lot of focus on forecasting with the entire team, but like it becomes so fundamental because it basically defines out what our pipeline needs are, where people are pacing in terms of all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And like, where can we push? Where do we need more support? Is there something specific that we need to go after? And like, again, this just comes from iteration. Like, we identified that we can't forecast all deals the same way. We had to pick a specific value in there that like, deals over this amount need to be forecasted in a different way, and then we like blend all of that together to provide an overall forecast. And that just came from like the business evolving, deals getting larger on average. And so like, as they got larger on average, the sales cycle changed, the stage rates changed, because like, we don't know, you know, like we haven't gone after those kind of clients before, so we don't know everything about them, you know. And so it's like just learning all of that stuff makes it so we need to be, you know, like more able to kind of shift that way that we look at it. And like, now they have their own close rates that we look at. Now they have longer sales cycles that we know, right? So it's just kind of updating that kind of stuff. But you know, we do our forecast multiple times, and then the sales managers do it every, you know, like every week. But it's kind of a combination of all of those for David to actually go in and say like, this is where I think we'll land.
Yeah, that's so interesting how we know different size deals have different cycles and a very different structure, but I feel like often can rely on just one forecast, and then I was like, why doesn't this work?
So yeah.
I think that's great advice for the listeners. Next
awesome.
Question, as far as compensation,
mm-hmm.
how have you set up your comp structure to support your overarching sales strategies, goals?
Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing I think is that, you know, comp always just goes to what the business needs are, right? So like, it's a great way to focus your reps to make sure that you can make something easy, but also like, it's a great time to say, you know, like if there's something specific that you want people to be focused on and you can add that into a comp plan, then you tend to drive focus on that thing specifically. But I found like the biggest thing for comp is like, make it simple, mm-hmm. simple to understand. Anybody that, you know, can't understand their comp plan, is never gonna, you know, like really achieve it.
Yeah.
Right. And it's also making sure that you have a really strong focus with, you know, like communicating with your finance team. Are these like, if all of these work out, does this model, you know, like allow for us to have the growth that we want?
Mm-hmm.
And are we like overpaying? Are we underpaying? Are we within industry averages? Right. Like, you don't want to make somebody feel like they're not making enough money, but you also want to make sure that it's in line with what the business goals are, right? And so like, it's making it super simple to like actually understand. And then it's just making sure that it aligns with, you know, like what our goals are. And like, there are always things that you can do, you know, like spiffs on a certain month or something like that. But I think like the actual core compensation plan should be super simple and
okay.
like super direct.
When you do those spiffs, do you ever experiment with like, you know, fun prizes or trips if they hit a certain goal, or do you try to kind of keep it traditional and say it?
So we have a couple different things that we do. It's like, you know, we'll do, you know, like people can win different things sometimes. But I think, you know, like if a contest is out there, like I think of spiffs, you know, more as like we're trying to do one thing specifically. So like if you introduce, I've done this before with like introducing a new product line or something, we want to sell those product lines more specifically, right?
Yeah.
So we can implement a spiff on that. In terms of like competitions and stuff like that, I find if they're not run well and there's not a lot of direction on them, then they become more of a distraction than actually being effective. So like, it just, again, it takes planning and making sure that the focus is in the right place. But like, if you know, like if we're all driving towards a specific goal and there's a like, you know, line or like there's something at the end of that road, like that everybody's working towards, that can be really positive. But I think, you know, the competitions need to, you know, weigh out of like, is this being effective for the business? Are we achieving our right goals, or is this more of a distraction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And last question, this has been a great interview so far, and thank you for following up with all my follow-up questions.
Yeah.
What do you see as the main big shifts or any big changes you see in sales ops coming in the next few years?
I think the one that I'd like to see the most, I think there's two main things that I'd like to see the most, and I'm starting to see it now, is one, like, disassociate Salesforce administration with sales operations, right? They're two different things, and, like, you can be very analytical and be a great sales ops manager with, in terms of sales strategy, sales compensation, sales process, and even understanding the tech stack that you need, right? But Salesforce administration in a company is a massive thing, and it takes a lot of effort. And so, like, when you combine both of those roles, you don't get the focus that you need on either side. And so, like, I found myself in that position before where it's a struggle to keep, you know, like, what are the priorities here and what's going to get the most amount of attention and focus, right? When you, so, like, it's, you're not just hiring, like, when you hire somebody in sales ops, you're not just hiring a Salesforce admin naturally, right? There are people that are dedicated to that, that are growing, you know, in that career, and, like, they're much better people to hire for that position, right?
Yeah.
So I think that separation there, and then also just, like, the increased collaboration, you know, like, there's the big thing with, like, revenue ops right now that I'm seeing pop up more and more, and it's great, but it's also, like, you should always be collaborating with that stuff, right? Whether you take full ownership of those metrics one way or another, right? Like, that collaboration should always be there, and you should always be focused on, like, making sure that the data integrity is flowing from one place to the next. Like, if you're in operations, again, you're in the center, you're not, you don't want to silo anything out. You want to make sure that everything's driving towards that same goal.
Yeah, those are great two pieces of advice.